Open your Bibles with me, please, to Matthew chapter 18. Matthew chapter 18. I know we're few in number tonight, but it's good to have everybody here. And remember, the weather could be worse. My mother-in-law posted a picture up in the Chicago area where she lives, and they have snow this morning. So the rain is not great to get out in, especially in a cold night, but it could be worse. And so thankful that we're safely in this warm room and warm building and able to worship God together. Kendry gave me a weird look this morning when I announced about his sister, and I could tell something wasn't right. And I spoke with him and Lysandra afterward, and I only got the first part of the story and didn't get the full part of the story. He was telling me his sister had been baptized. She's faithful to God and was just excited for that. That was the first part of the story. What I did not have time to listen to was his sister is pregnant, and she's having just some complications with her pregnancy and had texted him and let him know yesterday. And so keep her in your prayers. Her name is Natasha. And so please keep her in your prayers. And just pray that everything with her pregnancy goes well, because Kendry was worried about that. So tonight what I want to do is I want to deal with a text in Matthew 18, 15 through 17. The text begins in verse 15, if your brother sins against you. This is a common text, one perhaps you're not familiar with, but it's one that I think in Christian practice is one that it's fairly common. And my objective for tonight is pretty simple. What I would like to do is I would like to go into Matthew 18. We're going to focus on verses 15 through 17. And my objective is to understand the conditions, procedures, and outcomes of this text. Now, let me make a few introductory remarks about this sermon before we go into it. I presented a sermon very similar to this a few years ago whenever Jessica and I were coming up about once or twice a month and filling in. And got comments about how it's, was taken from a perspective people were not familiar with. And I just want to give a reminder of this text. It's been 4 years, and we've probably forgotten something in 4 years. Let me also say this with this text. This is a difficult text, I don't think, to understand. It's not like that text in Ephesians 3 that we've studied this morning about the spiritual realm. You know, that's a little bit difficult to get at. You got to chew on it a little bit. This is a text that I think in understanding is pretty simple. In practice is very difficult because it gets emotional. And emotions really run high in these situations. Let me also say this. There is no situation I have in mind with this sermon. None. There have been some sermons I've preached that y'all can tell. There have been certain situations I've had in mind and I think we need to deal with. This is not one of them. The elders and I sit down at the beginning of each month and plan out every sermon for the month. And this is one I've had on the back burner for a little while. And the elders and I talked about it last week. And this is a peaceful time right now. There's really no personal conflicts that we're engaged in. Not the elders and me, but the elders with anybody or myself. And it just seemed like a good time, while emotions are low, to get into this text. I much prefer, and the elders likewise prefer, for us to be able to understand a text before we have to use a text. And so I just want to go into this text. I have, again, no axe to grind. And let me just say, it always amazes me when I say this. Every time I say this, I still get at least 3 or 4 people on the way out. Is this what you had in mind? No, okay? I have nothing, no situation at all in mind. What I want to do is understand, when a brother sins against me, how do I handle this situation? It's a common situation. How do we handle this, all right? So let's get into the text together. Matthew chapter 18, let's read it together. Matthew 18, just 3 verses there. Beginning in verse 15, if your brother sins against you, go and tell him his fault between you and him alone. If he listens to you, you've gained your brother. But if he does not listen, take 1 or 2 others along with you, that every charge may be established by the evidence of 2 or 3 witnesses. If he refuses to listen to them, tell it to the church. And if he refuses to listen even to the church, let him be to you as a Gentile and a tax collector. One more time, verse 15. If your brother sins against you, go and tell him his fault between you and him alone. If he listens to you, you've gained back your brother. But if he does not listen, take 1 or 2 others along with you, that every charge may be established by the evidence of 2 or 3 witnesses. If he refuses to listen to them, tell it to the church. And if he refuses to listen, even to the church, let him be to you as a Gentile and a tax collector. So what's the context of this verse, first of all? Well, when we look at the book of Matthew, the book of Matthew is talking all about the kingdom. Really big picture-wise, Matthew focuses on kingdom principles. And what he's really talking about here is now the church, his kingdom, it's another description really given in the book of Colossians 1 of the church. But in his kingdom now, we have rules that guide us. We have principles that guide us. We have commandments that guide us. And what he's doing here is he's telling citizens of his kingdom, when you have personal sins that occur, this is how you're going to handle it. Okay? We, in our American system, of course, have civil law. Civil law is where if you have a sin against a brother, not a brother, against a fellow citizen, you deal with it in civil law. You go to civil court, and then there's a whole bunch of procedures and regulations you have to work through. In the kingdom of God, this is how we as brethren have to deal with personal sins. Not taking it to the court, but he wants it to be taken in-house, if possible. If we have personal sins against one another, let's deal with it with one another. One other thing I want to note about this. Let's read verse 10. See that you do not despise one of the little ones. For I tell you that in heaven, their angels always see the face of my Father who is in heaven. What do you think? If a man has 100 sheep and one of them has gone astray, he does not leave the 99 on the mountains and go in search of the one that went astray? And if he finds it, truly I say to you, he rejoices over it more than over the 99 that went astray. So it will be not be the will of my Father who is in heaven that one of these little ones should perish. What he's talking about here is a sheep that's gone astray. A sheep that's lost. And you'll notice what it says in verse 14. He does not want that one of his little ones should perish. The last sentence of verse 15. If he listens to you, you've gained back your brother. I think contextually he's talking about having lost a sheep. And now what he's talking about is gaining back a sheep, gaining back a brother. In this, there's two important principles that I really want us to drive home tonight. The first is this. This text is ultimately about gaining back your brother. This is not how to grind an axe. This is not how to be right. This is not how to get my rights justified. This is about gaining back my brother. And let me explain why I think this is so important. There was another church quite a few years ago now that I was working with. And there had been it was just a headache and a half to come up over one of the families. And I don't even want to begin to tell what was happening. And one of the women in the family had gotten mad at me over something I didn't even do and had a big meeting of me and a few other men, and I'll deal with that in a little bit. And her purpose in that meeting was to tell how me and one of the elders in the congregation were wrong. That's what she wanted to accomplish. She wanted to charge me and one of the elders with how wrong we were. The meeting was a fiasco. It was an absolute fiasco. She recognized whenever she started talking, she didn't have a leg to stand on. She had just gotten super emotional. She'd gotten super angry. She was crying, just super emotional. She really didn't understand what was going on. And her intent in that meeting was just to charge me about how wrong I was. Brethren, let me say this. If we use this text to charge a brother with how wrong they are, we have not understood the first principle of this text. This text is not talking about how I can be right. This text is talking about how to gain back a brother. From my experience, the number one mistake that is made whenever these type meetings occur is the motivation that happens going into these meetings. Rather than one brother seeking to gain back a fallen brother, one member trying to gain back a lost sheep, these meetings turn into, well, I'm going to be justified. I'm going to be right. No. Verse 15. If he listens to you, you've gained back your brother. Okay, I'm going to hit this home over and over again. This text is about gaining back a brother. It's not about being justified. It's about gaining back a brother. Now, what are the conditions? I'm going to talk about the conditions and also the procedures. He gives if-then statements. So what are the conditions of verse 15? All right, so let's read verse 15. If your brother sins against you, go and tell him his fault between you and him alone. So here's the conditions. Number one, if a brother sins. That's the first one. If a brother sins, and the second is going to be against you. I think these are really the two necessary conditions of this text. What this is talking about is really a personal sin against a brother. Now, we won't take the time to turn here, but if you also compare this with Second Thessalonians, they're likewise, very similar occurrence. You have a brother who's fallen. You're going to do everything you can to gain back that brother. This is in the context of the church. This is in the context of if we have a brother who's fallen, this is how we're to go about it. Now, I certainly think there are some common sense principles that can be applied to other situations. But this is really talking about a brother who has sinned against a brother. This is how to deal with it. A sister who sinned against a sister, a sister against a brother, whatever gender swap you want to put in there. This is about two Christians who have a personal sin. Now, the second part I think is extremely important as well. This is talking about against you. I want us to look down to verse 21. He tells us in verse 21, Peter came and said to him, Lord, how often will my brother sin against me and I forgive him? As many as seven times? We won't take the time to turn to Luke 17, but it's a similar concept there. This is talking about a personal sin against a brother. This is not just any sin. This is a personal sin against a brother. Now, let me illustrate this. I told Brian I'm going to pick on him. He's deserved it. Let's say Brian comes to my office tomorrow morning, and he disagreed with the sermon this morning. He thinks I misused some of the text in Ephesians 3, and I just was not getting it. So when Brian comes to my office, he just sits down and calmly tries to explain to me, Ryan, this is what the text means. I just want you to look at it a different way so we can arrive at truth together. I think you're erring. Now, let me tell y'all first of all what Brian's done well. Boy, this is going to get confusing. I should have told him someone else. The first thing he's done right is his motivation is to bring me back. His motivation is not to come to me, Ryan, this is how wrong you are. This is how wrong and this is how awful you use this text. Ryan, you use the text incorrectly, and I want you to come to a greater knowledge of the will of God so that you can be right in your understanding. That's the proper motivation. He's trying to gain me back. He thinks I am wrong in the sight of God and wants to gain me back, okay? It's not a personal axe to grind. He's trying to gain me back. But likewise, in this context, this is a public sin, okay? This is not something I have done to Brian. This is something that's a public sin, okay? And I really don't think that's exactly what's under consideration in this text. I think what's under consideration in this text is more this. Brian and I are meeting in my office, and I just get flaming mad at him. Who do you think you are to talk to me like that? I mean, seriously. I mean, you're going to try to tell me that explanation? Come on, really? And I get flaming mad. I call him everything but a Sunday school teacher. And I just get flaming mad at him. Okay? That second situation, I really think is what's under consideration in this text. In that case, I have personally sinned against Brian. And I'll explain in a second why I think that's so important. The first situation is a public sin where he's going to try to come and correct me. The second one is a private sin. It could also be I've lied to Brian. It could be I've stolen something from him. It could be I've defamed him. It could be I've accused him of something. But I have done something to Brian, and he is going to come to me. Now, this begs the question then, what does Brian need to do in this case? Okay, so I want to deal now with our second situation I talked about. Brian's come to my office. I've gotten flaming mad at him, and it just went horrible. I've sinned against Brian. I've sinned against him. So now what should Brian do? Well, the first question we need to ask is this. Has he met the two conditions? First of all, a brother sins. Second, against you. Yeah, I think I have. I think in this case, I've met both of the conditions for Brian to do what's necessary. I've sinned against him. So what does he need to do? Well, the first thing he needs to do is, number one, go and tell him his fault between you and him alone. So again, context, I've gotten mad against Brian, and I've sinned against my brother. The very first thing he needs to do is he needs to give me a time to calm down. And when he calms down, he needs to come to me privately and say, Ryan, that's not the way it should have been, brother. You sinned against God. You sinned against me. And there were some things that went down that shouldn't have gone down. He needs to go to me and he needs to come to me in private. This is one of the most missteps in this process. More realistically, this is what happens. Brian goes home and tells Amber, who then gets so upset at me that then she's going to call Jane. Jane's then so mad that she's going to tell Terry. Terry's then so mad that he's going to call Tom. Tom gets so flaming mad that he's going to call the elders. The elders then want to have a collective meeting with me, Tom, Terry, Jane, Amber, and Brian. And then we really don't even know what Brian's mad about in the first place. That's what should not happen. What should happen, Brian comes to me and his brothers in Christ, Brian, we're going to deal with this. We're going to sit down and we're going to deal with this. That's the first step that must be taken. We cannot skip this step, all right? Now, the end result, if he listens to you, you've gained back your brother. That's it. That's it. If Brian comes to me on Wednesday morning, you know, he came to me, Monday morning was when I got super mad, but he comes back Wednesday morning and he says, Ryan, this is, we need to talk through this. And I recognize, Brian, you're right. I was irritated. I was tired. I was hungry. And you know, I just lost my temper at you. I should not have. And brother, I'm sorry. I am sorry. And will you please forgive me? That's the end of it. Period. That's the end of it. I have asked for forgiveness. I think Brian's going to forgive me. We're good. We're good. We'll go back to teasing each other. He'll go back to putting things in my office. We'll go back to having a good time. That's the end of it. If I've repented, it's over. Okay? End of discussion. It's over. This is then not the time to say, well, Amber's still really mad. So Amber's still really mad. So she's going to call Jane, who's then going to tell Terry, who's then going to tell Tom, et cetera, et cetera. No, it's over. It's over. If Brian and I have worked it out, this is a sin between us. It's resolved. Period. Now, I do want to ask this question. What about a public sin? What I truly think this text is talking about is a private sin. Okay? So my two options. Number one, I preached something wrong. Number two, I've gotten mad at Brian. The second one's a private sin that I think is really under consideration in this text. Well, let's turn briefly to Romans 16. I do want to note this. Let's look at Romans chapter 16. The New Testament gives a whole different set of directions about what needs to occur with a public sin. Romans 16, verse 17. I appeal to you, therefore, brothers, to watch out for those who cause divisions and create obstacles contrary to the doctrine that you've been taught, and avoid them. Matthew 18 does not have to be followed in every single sin that occurs. And I would also say it should not be followed in every sin that occurs. Public sins are different in nature. Matthew 18, 15 through 17 is talking about private sins against a brother. If I've done something false against Brian, it very well makes sense to skip to step two. Because let's look back at our steps here. And again, we won't take the time to reference, but 1 Corinthians 5 talks about the brother who's fallen away and the church hasn't really done anything about it. Whole different set. He doesn't even appeal to the principles of Matthew 18. Likewise, in 2 Thessalonians 3, Paul does not even appeal to the principles in Matthew 18. Completely different, okay? But it may not make sense for it to be a public sin for Brian to come to me alone. It may make more sense to be like, you know, Ryan, I don't think he taught this right. Terry, what do you think of this? I mean, am I getting this wrong here? Did I misunderstand him yesterday morning? And if both Brian and Terry don't understand what I said, it could very well make sense for the two of them together to come to me and ask me. That's far different from Brian, from me getting mad at Brian and then him bringing Terry along. Okay? Private sins and public sins have to be dealt with differently. Now, in another sermon, at some point I'll deal with this and talk about what the New Testament says about public sins. But I want us to, brethren, to really understand Matthew 18 is talking about private sins. Okay? This is talking about a private sin against a brother, a personal sin against a brother. All right? Well, what then is my next step? Okay? So let's say, and for the rest of this evening, I'm dealing with my second situation. I'm not even going to talk about me teaching false doctrine, about what we should do about that. Yes, things have to be done. Not Matthew 18, but things have to be done about that. But I want to talk the rest of this evening. Let's say, again, I got mad at Brian. What should we do? Okay? Now, number one, he needs to come to me privately, and we're going to deal with this. Now, let's say it's Wednesday morning. Brian comes to me, and it does not go well. It does not go well at all. Again, who do you think you are, Brian? I mean, seriously. You're coming and telling me I got mad? You're the one that got mad. You need to watch your temper. It doesn't go well at all. So he's tried step one. He has come to me privately, and we have tried to work this out privately, and it just did not go well. Well, I want us to notice what the text says going into verse 16. If he does not listen, take one or two others along with you, that every charge may be established by the evidence of two or three witnesses. Okay? If this doesn't happen, you have to go to the witnesses. Now, brethren, let me just say this. I think step one, if done with the motivation of gaining back my brother, is going to work most times. It should. If you have two honest brethren, step one's all you're going to need. Let me illustrate it this way. When I was up at Lafayette, I was teaching the college class, and there was an older man in the class. He was in his 60s. It was actually Steve. Steve visited a few weeks ago. Steve and I have polar opposite personalities. I'm Mercury, he's Pluto. And he took a while for me to get. I mean, y'all know how just some people take a while to get. All the college students loved him. And I just didn't get him. And this was already into my second year. No, this is my third year. I'd already been up there 3 years. And I just still was not meshing with Steve. I mean, it's not that I didn't like him. It's just I just didn't get him that well. And he was sitting in the class. And it seemed like every class he would say something to contradict me. I mean, if I had tried to say that Matthew's about the kingdom, to me, he would have said, no, Mark's about the kingdom. I mean, it was just like everything I said, it seemed like he was nitpicking. So, Steve had sinned against me. This was a personal sin against me. This was not something public. This was something I felt Steve was personally sinning against me. Let me tell y'all what I did wrong in that case. I let it fester in me for about a month. I let it fester to where I was developing bad feelings against Steve. He is one of the most gentle, godly men I know. And I was developing bad feelings against him. So I finally texted Steve one Sunday afternoon and said, Steve, can we talk tonight after services? And said, he said, sure. So we went down to the basement. We talked. And I said, Steve, it just seems like every time in class, you're contradicting me. And I gave him a few examples. He said, Ryan, I'm just trying to give a different perspective. He said, I had no idea that you were viewing it this way. And I gave him a couple other examples. He was like, Ryan, hold on. This is what I meant by this. In some cases, I had misinterpreted. In some cases, his comments could have been said a bit differently. That was it. We cried together. We prayed together. We talked for about 30 minutes that night. And now there are few brethren on this earth that I respect as much as Steve Newton. That's how these situations should go. Steve talked to me about this about 4 months after it happened. He said, Ryan, the only thing you did wrong in that case, you should have come to me a month ago. And he was right. It was bubbling up inside me so bad that I should have gone to him a month ago. Brethren, I think often what we perceive as a personal sin against us may just be a perception. And oftentimes what these meetings do is they just get our perceptions together. If I sit down with Steve, this is to me how you've sinned. And this is how, brother, I love you and I want to work through this. And he had an open heart with me. And when I said, and y'all, I can't even speak his praises enough. When I said, Steve, this is what I perceive. The first words out of his mouth were, Ryan, I can see how you'd understand that. It was not, you little 26-year-old, how dare you think that. It was, you're Ryan, I can see how you'd understand that. Let me explain my perspective. That's it. To this day, I still get advice from Steve. It's over. It's because we went to step one. We didn't even have to go to step two. We went to step one, we're good. And I really just want to speak to the power of step one. In personal sin, step one has to be taken. I know it sounds like I'm beating a dead horse, brethren, but I have noticed too many situations where we go to step two and don't even consider step one. Well, looking then at step two. Going back to my situation with Brian. He's come to me Monday morning, I got mad. Wednesday morning he came to me, I get mad again. It did not work. What then should he do? Well, the situation under consideration here is he needs to get 2 to 3 witnesses, and let's notice this. If he does not listen, take 1 or 2 others along with you, that every charge may be established by the evidence of 2 or 3 witnesses. Now here is my question, who are these witnesses? My number one point I wanted y'all to get tonight was, this is about gaining back your brother. This is the second main point I want you to get tonight. Who are these witnesses? Okay? You'll notice it says in verse 16. Finally, I'm looking at my text. I apologize, y'all. Verse 16. That every charge may be established by the evidence of 2 or 3 witnesses. The purpose of these witnesses is the establishment of the charge. The establishment of the sin. And I want us to turn back to Deuteronomy chapter 19. And I want us to look in Deuteronomy 19 what the purpose of witnesses was. Deuteronomy chapter 19. We're going to begin in verse 15. Deuteronomy 19 verse 15. A single witness shall not suffice against a person for any crime or for any wrong in his connection with any offense that he has committed. Only on the evidence of 2 or 3 witnesses shall a charge be established. If a malicious witness arises to accuse a person of wrongdoing, then both parties to the dispute shall appear before the Lord, before the priest and the judges who are in office in those days. The judges shall inquire diligently, and if the witness is a false witness and he has accused his brothers falsely, then you shall do to him as he meant evil, as he meant to do to his brother. But you shall purge the evil from your midst, and the rest shall hear and fear, and shall never again commit any such evil among you. Your eyes shall not pity. It shall be life for life, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot. So let me ask you this question. Are these witnesses of the sin or of the interaction? In Deuteronomy 19, these are witnesses of the sin. Now, I'm not going to take the time to go there. But if you look in Numbers 35, Deuteronomy 17, 2 Corinthians 13, and 1 Timothy 5, every single time you have witnesses in the Bible, this is establishing a sin has been committed. So let me ask it this way. Monday morning, I got mad at Brian. That's the first time, you know, I really got mad at him. Wednesday morning, he comes to me. And that's when he tries to go through step one. It doesn't work. Then let's say he decides to come back to me on Friday. Who should these witnesses be? Should he bring along Terry and Tom, who didn't see the sin, so that they can be there on Friday and help him? Absolutely not. These are not the witnesses under consideration. The witnesses that are under consideration in Matthew 18 are witnesses of the original sin that occurred on Monday. And let me explain why I think this is so important. If you look at Deuteronomy chapter 19, the explanation that's given in that verse is it's to protect them against false witnesses. So let me explain what this looks like in practice. Monday morning, I get mad at Brian. Wednesday morning, he comes back and tries to correct me. It doesn't go well. Friday morning, then, he comes to me. If he brings Terry and Tom along, who never saw either of our interactions on Monday or Wednesday, what are they there for? If they did not see either what occurred on Monday or Wednesday, really the only reason they're there is to gain up on me. I mean, they're just there to gain up on me. They did not know what occurred. They didn't see what occurred. And they're just coming along with Brian so that Brian can have a group with him and just gain up on me. That's it. What Matthew 18 is talking about is this. Let's say tonight after services, Brian, I've just picked on him too much. I've just crossed the line. And, you know, we're out in the foyer. Most of the congregation's left, but Terry and Tom are left. And I get mad at Brian. I mean, again, I call him everything but a Bible school teacher, and I just get mad at him. Tom and Terry see this. Tom and Terry see me lose my temper. And they see me get mad at Brian. Well, again, what should Brian do in this case? Well, in this case, let's say Tuesday morning, Brian's number one going to come to me alone. Tom and Terry, y'all aren't going to come the first time. Brian's going to come to me first. Brian is going to come to me in private, and he and I are going to work this out. And I have full confidence, brother, we're going to work it out at step one. But if not, Tom and Terry can come along and say, Ryan, you really did lose your temper. This is why I think this is so critical, brethren. If Tom and Terry did not see what occurred, how are they to help to establish the charge? That's what's being warned about in Deuteronomy 18. Likewise, you think 1 Timothy 5:19 and 20, do not accept a charge against an elder except on the account of 2 to 3 witnesses? The protection given against an elder is the same protection given against any member. That's not a special protection against elders. That's a protection given against any member. Here's realistically what could have happened. Brian actually had a grudge to grind against me. I mean, he, for some reason, thinks Star Wars is better than Harry Potter. And, you know, this has just gotten to him so much that he just doesn't like me. I mean, he just doesn't like me. So, in the interaction, I may have said something to the effect of, Brian, I see where you're coming from, brother. I just don't think you're right. Brian then took that to mean that I was hateful, that I was angry, that I was rude, that I was malicious. And then he is going to use that interaction to say, you know what? Tom, Terry, listen to what Ryan did to me tonight. We were back in the foyer, and y'all listened to what he did. He lost his temper at me. He cussed at me. No, I didn't. I was forthright with you, but I didn't lose my temper and cuss at you. If Tom and Terry weren't there to see it, how are they supposed to know what occurred? It very well may be that Brian's the one who's in the wrong, and I'm the one who actually has been sinned against in this case. If the witnesses were not there to see the original sin, brethren, don't bring along the witnesses. That's not the purpose of the witnesses. This is when it turns from a private sin to gain back your brother to a political fiasco. Going back to a situation that I was in a few years ago, this lady was furious. Her emotions were raging. She brought along two men in the congregation who, they didn't like the elders. They tolerated me. One of them did, at least. And they had no idea what she was talking about. The interchange that she was talking about, neither one of them had been witness to. But for an hour, we sat there. It was one of the elders and me, this lady and these two gentlemen, and the three of them laid into us about everything in the world. They had no clue what had actually occurred. But she had called them and gossiped to them and had told them really lies about what had occurred. And for 45 minutes. And y'all, after that meeting, boom. The family decided to leave. They caused a lot of problems. I'll just tell you the end of the story. The two witnesses ended up repenting a bit later. They ended up recognizing what they did was wrong. And it was just that family who decided to go, and that was the end of the story. But that was it. Let me ask this question. What if there are no witnesses? Again, this is conditions and this is procedures. If I don't have the 2 or 3 witnesses who saw the sin and can charge the sin, I need to stop at step number one. I need to stop at step number one. This is not the time for Brian to call Tom and Terry and say, well, this is what I think's going on, and so I'm going to bring you two along with me. If we do not have the 2 or 3 witnesses who saw the sin, brethren, it's time to stop at step one. Brian and I need to figure it out. And at some point, I will talk about in more detail what to occur if there's no witnesses. And we can deal with that if the situation ever arises. I've never really seen this to occur. It's either public sins or private where there's some level of witness. But if I don't have those 2 to 3 witnesses, I do not need to bring those 2 or 3 witnesses along and have a little political gang. That's not the purpose of this is all. It's to charge them. Okay, and then let's notice this. Step number 3. If then, verse 16, he goes. And into verse 17, if he refuses to listen, tell it to the church. Number 3, if he refuses to listen to it, then tell it to the church. If on Sunday night, I get mad against Brian and I cuss at him. Tom and Terry see this. Tuesday morning, Brian comes to me personally. We work through it. It doesn't work. Thursday morning, Brian, Terry, and Tom, who again, they saw the sin, they come to me, and the three of them work with me and try to get me to see my wrong, but I refuse to listen. That then is the point that I go to the church. That's the point that Brian should then go to the elders, go to the church, and then work it out more collectively. Only at that point. Only once you have followed step one and step two should you go on to step three. Let me again explain what Brian should not do. Sunday night I get mad at Brian. So the first thing Brian wants to do, Brian wants to go tattle to Randy tonight and tell him what I did. If I can say it, Brian, if this occurs between us, be a man. Come to me first. Let's deal with this in private. I think fear oftentimes, fear and emotions drive these type situations. Where Brian just wants to be corrected, but you know he really doesn't have enough courage to stand up to me personally, so then he's going to get a gang to come up against me. Absolutely not, Brian. Be a man and let's deal with this. Okay? And brethren, if I'm not willing to deal with this step one and step two, I better not go to step three. You know, it's easy to give the elders all my problems. And Randy, use your magic wand to fix this. You know, just use your magic wand and fix every problem that occurs. Okay? They don't have one. You need to come to me and you deal with this first. And then the final step is step four. And if he refuses to listen even to the church, let him be to you as a Gentile and tax collector. That's the point then, where the elders are going to get involved. They're going to mark me and they'll withdraw from me if I refuse to listen. Brethren, this is God's pattern for dealing with private sin. Okay? As I said at the beginning, from my perspective and the perspective of the elders, this is a time of peace that we have right now. And I am thankful to God for that, and I hope we have it for years and years and years to come. But at some point, I will either wrong one of you, or you will perceive that I have wronged you. In either case, if there's ever a situation where if Steve feels like I have wronged him, Steve, I want you to go to step one and I want you to come to me. Otis, if there's ever a situation where it feels like I have wronged you, brother, I want you to do step one and I want you to come to me. And brethren, I mean that. Go through the steps of the gospel. God's plan is far better. All of us have seen these steps taken out of order. And all of us have seen the chaos that can ensue when these steps are taken out of order. If a brother sins against me, I'm going to go to him in private. If then I don't listen, and I do have witnesses that have seen the sin, then I'm going to bring those 2 to 3 witnesses and I'm going to charge the sin. If then that brother refused to listen, then I'm going to go to the church. And then finally step four, if then I even then refuse to listen, that's the point then where I'll be marked. If you have questions about this text, y'all, please ask me afterward. I hope that the format of conditions and procedures has been clear, and I hope it's easy to follow. As I said, I don't think this is a text that's difficult to understand. It's one that's difficult to practice. If I do get mad at Brian, what's far easier is Brian to get mad at me, and then he has no desire to gain me back. So then he's going to call everybody and go to the elders, and we're going to have a fiasco about what occurs. Come to me, brother. Come to me and let's work through it. And let's work through our problems as God has told us to. Get out your psalm books, please. The lesson tonight, of course, is one that is dealing with a very specific type situation. Some sermons, like the one this morning, are more generic and deal with broader themes of the church and the whole gospel message and the scheme of redemption. The one tonight is dealing with a very specific situation. But brethren, let me also say this. From my limited experience in 26 years, this is one of the most difficult passages to actually practice. Because Satan wants to get in our minds, and he wants to get us mad at one another, and he wants us to stop loving one another, And he wants us to just have a great fiasco to occur because we refuse to follow step one, step two, step three, step four. As I urged this at the beginning, our motivation needs to be to gain back a brother. Brethren, if there's ever a time where I think one of you has sinned against me personally, I'm going to come to you in private and I'm going to work it out. My interaction with Steve was one of the most eye-opening interactions I've had in my life. Because you couldn't have asked for a better interaction or a better outcome. And I thought about this for weeks after. It was like, I've of course had to deal with these type things before. And they never go that smoothly. I mean, this one was just like roses were on the wall. I just couldn't explain it. But I recognized Steve and I loved one another. I mean, while we may have had different personalities, we loved one another. I wanted to see him go to heaven just as much as he wanted to see me go to heaven. And that love, we were able to get through it. This morning we talked about in Ephesians chapter 2 that we're a household of God. And naturally from that, y'all, we're a family. And I know that families never fight, right? Yeah, right. Families get in disagreements. Let's not be surprised by that. If we're truly a family of God, we're going to have some good ones. But God's given us a way to work through it. There's going to be times where I'm going to rub some of y'all this wrong way and you think that I may have wronged you. Let's work through it. There's going to be times when I will think that y'all have wronged me. Let's work through it. If we're a family and we love one another, brethren, we can gain back one another and we can get to heaven together. If anyone wants to respond to the gospel message, to be baptized into Jesus Christ and to put him on. Or there may be a situation that this has opened up for you tonight you've not dealt with right. Let me make one recommendation before the invitation. The invitation is not the time for you to deal with a private sin. But this is a perfect time to come before the congregation and ask for help or ask for forgiveness if there's anything that you've done that you need God's help to get you through. If anyone wants to respond to the invitation, come forward while we stand and while we sing.